You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show with your host, Brian Callen.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Brian Callen Show with my colleague, Hunter Motz. The Brian Callen Hunter Motz Show, I should say. And it really is. Congratulations, Hunter.
Oh, my God, the honor.
That's a truck in the background. Our guest is white as shit. His name is Christian Lander. Sir Christian Lander. He's been knighted by myself. Wrote an amazing book that everybody who's white should read, called The Definitive Guide to Stuff White People Like, The Unique Taste of Millions. And there's a huge thumbs up on it. I love it.
It's also not just for white people. If you're like black or Asian or Native American and trying to figure out the whole white thing, yeah. It's a really, really, if it's anything, it's written not
how,
to white people.
How weird we are.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, it's also, I mean, it's written as a guide to exploit white people.
Yeah, well, as well it should be, because I was in Portland, as I was telling you before we started recording this, and I swear to God, I was like, there's a uniform these people are wearing, and there is very predictable behavior. Mm-hmm. Coffee, mm-hmm. wine tastings, mm-hmm. Chocolate, mm-hmm. specific kinds of chocolate, fair trade, yeah. organic.
Absolutely.
But please, sir, what caused you to write this? You're a redhead.
Yeah.
You're white as shit.
Yeah.
What's your nationality?
Oh, well, I was born in Canada.
Damn right you
were.
Oh, my
God. So, that's
It's actually, it's horrendously white. It goes back, so my family, my dad's really big into genealogy, which white people love to do. And my dad's traced it back to the Mayflower.
Wow.
But the other thing was my family, as it went along, eventually sort of interbred with people who were very loyal to England. So during the American Revolution, my family were United Empire loyalists who, rather than fight, left the U.S.,
and
left
went
New
back
York.
To the
no,
motherland.
Moved to Canada.
Oh.
They came across the border up to Canada to stay loyal to the king. And so that's where my family is on my dad's side. On my mom's side, my mom was born in England. In Devon, so.
You do have an aristocratic bearing.
Oh, they weren't really aristocratic people, well, but I'll take it.
In my mind, you do. Maybe you should be talking this way, of course. I'm Christian Lander, everyone. Tell us about the book. It's funny as hell. It's so good.
The way I wrote it was, I grew up in Toronto, super multicultural, believe it or not. Like
yeah.
as people have a vision of Toronto,
yeah,
it's like
I've
the whitest in, place in the world. It's actually
I've performed
really
there. It's great.
Multicultural, and you know, most of my friends are different races. And one of my best friends is Miles. Who wrote a couple posts in the book. He's Filipino.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, you know, I was at work. I was working at an ad agency. Miles was working at a video game company. We were talking back and forth about The Wire.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
White people love The Wire.
One of the best shows
the
of all time.
Of course it is.
Seen every episode.
Yeah. And we love the. And then Miles says he doesn't trust any white person who doesn't watch The Wire. That's it. Miles' full statement. He's like, there's no way they can't be trusted. And then we just started going back and forth about, like, well, what are they doing instead of watching The Wire? And we came back. It was like, oh, they're going to therapy. They're doing yoga. They're getting divorced. And I was like, that's it. And I started writing it on a blog. And it's like, it's blog time. Just started writing stuff white people like, thinking it was only going to be a couple friends who read it. And then it just took off from there.
Yeah. What do you think it is about the fact that we drink? I mean, I don't know. I'm half Sicilian, so mm-hmm. I don't know how white I am. I don't feel as white. I feel way more Latin.
Mm-hmm.
And I also grew up all over the world. But personally, I feel way more at home in my places like Miami or around a bunch of Lebanese guys or Israelis. I really do. I think I'm just – I definitely don't think I'm very white.
Okay.
Personally.
Sure.
But then again, love my wine.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I don't go to therapy. Love my wine.
Mm-hmm.
Love my chocolate.
Yeah.
I'm a foodie.
Of course.
Well, Brian, let's try and find out, are you white or not? Like, let's try and answer
yeah,
that
let's
on
do
this
that.
Today's podcast.
Let's do that. Let's do that.
It shouldn't be hard. I mean, one of the things that is in the book that was sort of meant to be the humor is that white, I mean, I always make the joke, you don't have to be white, you just have to be rich. Because ultimately, all those people would come up to me, you know, these people would just be like, oh my God, I mean, I'm Chinese, but I'm white. I can't
right,
believe it.
Right, right. Right.
It's like, no, it's as much of anything, it's a class thing.
Yeah.
And this is what was sort of going throughout the book and sort of one of the things that I've always thought is that there's – and this is – it's interesting you mentioned being Sicilian, sort of the history of immigration to this country and the melting pot and what's changed, you know, in the past 100 years was that when immigration came from Europe, change a last name and one generation, and guess what? You're white, you know, whether you're Irish, Jewish,
yeah.
Italian, et cetera, German. And all these people were, you know, looked down upon and discriminated against for being these foreigners, but within a generation could really become – natural-born Americans. And the immigration patterns of the country are very different now.
Yeah.
So if you come to the U.S. from China, from Mexico, from Africa, anywhere else, no matter how many generations you've been here, people will still ask, where are you from? And
yeah.
it doesn't have that same level of immigration. So white has really become, you know, the class
yeah.
the class idea of eventually getting wealth and moving to the middle class and becoming white is still very much alive.
Especially the way we treat our animals, huh?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I mean, anthropomorphic, you know, kind of traits we put on our animals.
Well, I think that I mean, an Obamacare for dogs would have passed a lot faster, without a doubt. I think that everyone would have been like, yes, of course, we should all support the health care of these dogs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's definitely what it is. I mean, and right now, I mean, the big white thing right now in dogs, I mean, I don't know how up to date you are on, like, white dog relationships, but the new one right now is the service dog scam we're pulling.
Oh, yeah.
We're all over this.
Dude, I was at my stand-up in Portland in the front row. A woman who I know, who's great, but she had her dog, her service dog, to happen to have been an attack-trained German Shepherd.
Yep.
Right, and the reason she said that the dog didn't really, wasn't really, it was looking at me a couple times as I was jumping around. She goes, oh, she listens, to, she's probably going to hear this. She listens to your podcast all the time.
Of course.
So she's fine, but she had a service dog thing on it.
For emotional distress?
She didn't want to say it in front of a bunch of people, but yes, it was probably, I don't know what it was for, but this was a highly trained
what
Shepherd.
What else do you get a service dog for?
Well, it's really easy to do. Yes.
Yeah. It has to be emotional distress, though. That's the only claim you can make if you can't, unless you're going to fake blindness on a plane, which makes you a real...
I'm blanking on her name because I'd like to give her a shout-out. She's an avid listener.
But great. That's the new one, is that lets us take our dogs into restaurants and HD Buttercup in Culver City, and, you know.
I'm looking up her name. Keep talking.
And that we're on. So, yeah, you know, I mean, that's our big relationship. It's just been nuts to see the dog status has just gone higher
and higher. English people, I mean, since your mother's English, like, English people, I think, I lived in England for 10 years. They have a particularly weird relationship with their animals. I mean, they really like animals much more than people.
Yeah.
As a rule.
I mean, it all depends on what part of England you're in. Yeah. You know, I mean, who you're I mean, they don't really like foxes all that much if you're dealing with deer.
Well, that's true. That's true. Can you explain?
This I is looked something. Up Shepherd in my email so I could find out who this was, and I got this. Girls and freckled. Fuck their beer and their shepherd's pie, too, and fuck you guys. That's interesting. Never mind. Let's keep moving on. Sorry.
But so, I mean, you know, even like, for example, the thing with wine, right? Like, you make the point in the book, lots and lots of people all over the world like wine.
Yeah.
But there's a particular way that white people like wine. And Brian, I think this would be a really good test for whether you're white or not.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I've spent a lot of money on Riedel glasses because I like my wine. I like...
Brian, that's pretty damn white.
Not only that. I get my beans, my coffee beans, from a place called Cafe Lux, which has the best coffee. A friend of mine has a special area in his very, very big house where he makes coffee a specific way with a hand... you know, crafted espresso maker.
Well, hang on. We got a question here.
Yeah.
So you get your beans from Cafe Lux. That's great. Yeah. How do you grind them?
Okay. Well, I grind them. I have a very expensive espresso maker. I grind them. I don't do it by hand.
Okay.
I don't do it by hand. But it grinds the beans in my espresso maker. And then I have actually read up on, you know, look, a good barista.
Well, are you saying you got an all-in-one?
I got an all-in-one.
All right.
I'm not that white.
Not that white right now. Because, it's the whole thing with wine and with coffee. Is the whole thing is, like, what white people do is it's like, yeah, everybody likes it, but we like it so much that we ruin it for everybody else. Like, you know that dude when you're a kid and you're, like, playing with G.I. Joes and you're like, oh, this one. He's, like, giving you the whole backstory on every character.
Right.
And he's like, oh, and you got to get – and he knows everything. You're like, this really isn't fun anymore.
Yeah.
We're like that with coffee. So it's like you're going to buy your beans. That's great. Whole beans always, every time. You can't do the all-in-one because it's the old trick. You know what I mean? Instead of having two things that do one thing great, you have one thing that does two things kind of mediocre.
Yeah.
So what you need is a burr grinder because you can't use the regular spice grinders because they heat up and they cook the beans. You can't use that.
I can't.
So you need to move to a burr grinder or a hand mill because the hand mill won't heat up the beans, causing the flavor to change.
Fantastic.
Then when you're going to the machine, anytime you're dealing with electricity, I mean, as white people, we love electricity, but we also love anything that's more like hand, you know, rustic and stuff like that. So you want to move to probably a drip over method, something like a Harrier. You're going to need to get the gooseneck, you know, kettle. And the AeroPress is personally my absolute favorite way to make it, but the Chemex is also pretty good. But you got to get away. You gotta get
this
away
is
from
pornographic. Let me get my hand down my pants.
All right. You gotta get away from machines, man. You gotta, you know, you gotta really connect with the beans.
But this is a recent phenomenon. This sort of idea of getting back to the earth, butchering the entire pig right there. All these restaurants where you're sitting on reconstituted wood plank tables, even communal tables. When did this happen? It started happening in, you know, very recently.
Fairly. I mean, what's interesting about it is there's a weird. It's not ironic, but. In a younger generation of white people, you know, everyone sort of says hipsters, is this desperation to, and I know you feel this way, but to reclaim some sense of a working class.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where the uniform comes from, the plaid shirt, you know what I mean, the American-made jeans turned up at the bottom, work boots.
Well, I talked to all these loggers who were like, these dudes don't have any idea how to swing an axe or work a saw, and these morons are dressing the way we have to dress.
Well, there is, of course, a company in New York that does make like artisanal axes that are really just meant to be kept. They're great. They also make blankets. I have an extension cord from them that I paid $40 for.
But yeah, they make artisanal axes.
They make artisanal axes.
Brian, so we may need to get you one for your birthday.
Dude, I swear to God, I was like, I kind of need an artisanal axe.
I can't remember the name of the company, but they also do they do these really great extension cords and all of this sort of.
Is it Best Bespoke Axes by Best Made Co?
Best Made, yeah.
Well, do you remember the J. Peterman catalog?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, that was where, you know, everything they made was, you know.
There we go.
Oh,
so yeah. Best Made.
And I also particularly
like
that.
Perfect for my killing spree.
Well, and the fact that the bottom of the handle has, like, yachting colors or, like, it looks like a croquet pole or something like that. Yeah, Brian, you kind
of
need that.
And do they make a lot of stuff?
They do some extension cords. They do these great maps as well, sort of. Like vintage looking maps that you can just put up on your wall. And they have a great one for Southern California that we have. It's just a big one of the region and just says everything is wonderful here, right over, over top. It's
you
great.
Know you have money when you can spend, you know, extra, that much money
on an axe
on
you will never
use.
Axe.
But where it comes from is this sort of stuff with the axes. And it's kind of a rejection. I mean, we've hit a point where we're just so, everything is so virtual and everything is so mass manufactured that, like, the last things that you can really connect to that you can't order online is, you know, a hot cup of coffee. So you make it yourself, or especially food. I mean, I'm a food obsessive.
So
and so the move back in towards food, especially and all that cooking, is this is an experience that cannot be done online. This is an experience that can't be exported. Mm. This is a very physical and very present thing. And so there's a real desire to get back to what we feel we've lost in a lot of cases, which is why
artisan
bread,
you know, all these things. I have to say, I resonate with that so profoundly. My friends call me the aristocrat because I can walk into a restaurant and smell it and go, nah, don't like the way bread baskets. Nah, I'm out. Yeah. I can just see things and I go, you know, you develop very sensitive antenna.
Absolutely. I'm 100% with you on this one. I mean, like, but that's what it is. I mean, and there's also, and this is a personal thing on mine where it comes down to, for all that's going to annoy other people, the pleasure that you derive from it is incredible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You've taken this thing that so many people will sort of just shove bread in their face and be like, oh, it's all right. But when you can find, it's the same with coffee, you find the differences in the subtleties. It's
well,
a real
opportunity
for
pleasure.
Wouldn't you say
the Europeans haven't lost a lot of this? I mean, when you go to parts of Italy, and you go to, like, the north or whatever, the bread, they take their time with their food, man. They've never lost the importance. Of course, things are mass-scaled and stuff in a lot of Europe, but you know, try telling like an Italian that, you know, their bread is going to come from the wonder that in that package. No way.
Yeah.
There are a lot of places where they still make the bread, and you see them in caves, and the honey and everything is made. Wine is, you drink the wine that's made a mile away from you.
Yeah.
But there's a big difference there because, I mean, when you go to Europe, yes, they do an amazing job with making the bread, but it tends to be like a single variety of, like, they'll really take their time to make a really great baguette or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're provincial that way. Yes.
Yeah. But when you go to America, it's always about the new. You know, it's always about, like, oh, this bread is actually made with spelt, or, you know, this bread has, like, craisins and, like, you know, single origin sunflower seeds.
And that comes from having enough leisure time on your hands to enjoy life.
Well, that's the unfortunate thing about it is now you need a degree from Sarah Lawrence to be a lumberjack. You know what I mean? Like, we're like, as if,
where'd you go to school?
I went to McGill in Montreal.
Yeah, of course.
And then I went to Arizona for a master's and then half a PhD in Indiana.
Wow. Really?
What does half a PhD get you?
A writing job on Chosen.
Yeah, a wife. Like, I met my wife
in
the grad school program, and we dropped out. I hit a wall of academia. Yeah. I just couldn't go any further.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like as if we didn't have enough as upper middle class white people, we're going to take back all of the, you know what I mean, all of the working class jobs we think are cool.
Yeah.
We're gonna
pull
them right back.
But that's where white upper class came from. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, this country was founded not only on the blacks of, you know, Chinese and black and Latin people, but you know, if you look at New York back in the day, Irish and Boston, those places, those were rough and tough dudes and gals who worked with their hands. And, you know, so there is a tradition. It's this, this thing is very new for us.
Yes. But it's coming back in a way and it's more expensive now.
It's a lot. Man, is it expensive. Yeah. Those pizzas, and it's so goddamn good.
Yeah. I mean, my other thing is the other thing is we've moved to Made in the USA is now a vanity label. You know, something that's made in America. And I mean, I do my best, obviously, as, like, a, you know, conscious white person, try and buy as much made in America as I possibly can. But all that's left are, like, you know, selvedge jeans and you know, fancy made shirts.
Well,
and
on Abbot Kinney here in Venice, you can have your jeans made.
Yeah.
At this, you can look like you work on a train in the 20s.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's definitely the look we're going for.
Suspenders.
Yeah. And sometimes you go with the chambray shirts, look a little bit like an ex-con, like an old-timey
But ex-con. Again, I draw the line because I want to be unique.
Of course.
And isn't that a white trait?
Yeah.
So trying to be special and unique. You talk about the origins of this, and it comes from white guilt. Yeah. The idea that we were colonialists.
Yeah.
So we deal with fair trade and organic, even though organic, you could never feed the planet.
Yes.
On organic foods. It's probably actually destructive for the environment. A lot of people don't realize.
Depends in different ways. And all. I mean, like, well, that's the other thing is you never want to point out is that without the agricultural revolution of the 60s, you know, millions and millions of people would have died. We've starved to death.
Right.
But we don't want to bring that up because it's the thing we love as white people is the best part about fair trade and the best part of buying made in the USA and all the stuff that I do is that I can feel better that I'm making a difference without making any sacrifice.
You're paying a couple more dollars with it, and it's better anyway.
Yeah, so I'm going to pay an extra $1.50 for this coffee, and that fixes poverty. Good job. You're welcome, Nicaragua.
God, there's a chocolate bar at Intelligentsia. It was $9.
There you go.
And there was a picture of the actual farmer who farms the cocoa beans. And somehow I was like, $9 for a... I would never do that in front of some of my friends.
Yeah.
My buddy Dove Davidoff would be like, listen, man, you worship at the Catholic Church. I can't even talk to you. $9? He won't even go in there. $5 for a cup of coffee? He just calls me. He just makes so much fun of me for being very white. And he, but I was like, no, I'm supporting Juan.
Of course. But this is.
By the way, best chocolate I've ever had.
Absolutely. Because what you tasted was kindness. That's the extra ingredient.
And the money.
There you go.
Yeah. And the fact that you're an amazing human being.
My accountant was going through the way I spend money. He literally, you know, he just kept saying, it's all food. I mean, it's all food. I was like, I really like good wine. I know, but I mean, this is ridiculous. His voice was getting that high.
No, it's a worthwhile investment.
Yeah, I agree. I have nothing to show. All the money I spend, I got nothing to show for it. Everything I make, I spend.
Yeah.
And when I think about making a lot of money, I want to make a lot of money. I don't make a lot of money. I make a good living. But I always think about making millions. And when I make millions, I swear to God, I think about just eating even better.
Yeah, absolutely.
I literally, my life would change in very little. I would fly first class. Uh-huh. And I would, because I fly so much, and I would drink just really good wine. I have a crazy wine cellar. And that would be, I don't drive the same car. Which would be a sensible car, good gas mileage and safe.
Of course.
Right? You drive a Prius.
Yes,
thank you.
Of course I do.
So I'm very white so far.
Yeah, you're doing pretty well already.
I definitely am very aware of the number of black backs, the colored backs, the different colors of backs that I sort of rode in on as a white person. The math fell in my favor. I grew up all over the world. Mm-hmm. I saw people of who are different colors than I was suffering or who had much less than I did, not necessarily suffering. I was very acutely aware as a kid of how lucky I was to be an American, part of an American superpower, and to be white and American. I've never lost that. If I was black and American, I have a very different perspective. Yeah. So blah, blah, blah. The list goes on. Yes, so I'm very aware. I am very aware of my colonial lineage. Mm-hmm.
Shameful.
Even though I had nothing to do with it, I still feel like I have some shame. I want everyone everywhere to be as well off as I am.
Of course.
I eat, but then I really don't sacrifice any of that for my taste buds.
Yes, of course.
I have to have very fresh, very good coffee.
Rather you try and figure out ways that, you know, your moral compass and your gustatory palate can align.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's just being very aware. Yes, of course. I mean, it's your awareness of... As a white person, it's like your obligation to be more aware of, you know, the process and the food chain and all that we go through. You know what I mean? The industrial food problem that we have in this country. You know, and you want to make sure that all of the meat you're buying is, you know, stage 5. You know what I mean? Non-crate. You know what I'm talking about. All
Do
that
I ever? You mean grass-fed?
Of course.
They're natural ruminants.
Yes.
They shouldn't be eating grains.
Yes, not pasture-finished. We're talking
Thank
grass-fred
you.
All the way up.
Thank
and you,
you.
And you know all of this. And yet I have this thing. I mean, I have a lot of, you know, colonial problems and all this kind of stuff. And I'm an obsessive... I grew up in Chinatown in Toronto, so I'm obsessive about Chinese food, like absolutely obsessive.
Are you?
Every weekend, my wife and I go to the San Gabriel Valley, every single one to eat. And
Wait
I know
a minute, I love this. So
what
you
are
go
your
to this,
favorite places there?
You go to the San Gabriel Valley.
Every weekend.
Okay, why?
It's the best Chinese food in America by far. It's not even close.
Really?
That's true.
Better than San Francisco, better than New York. Nowhere comes close to how good San Gabriel Valley is. Valley Boulevard is the most delicious street on the continent by far.
Wow.
It's incredible. Everything.
Why? And, why? Because they're just...
Well, it depends. You have a variety of Chinese and Vietnamese food, and the authenticity is just... it's remarkable. You know, yeah. having traveled to China and having traveled to Taiwan, and the quality that you get, it tastes just like
they
you're
take
over
so much time in preparing.
They
the
take
food.
Time preparing it. They don't prepare it for a white palate. Oh. Which is always my disaster with Chinese food restaurants, right? Is once I see the vegetarian menu expanding, I'm like, oh, here we go. We're done. We're finished yeah. here.
It's so not what is authentic Chinese and Vietnamese food? A lot of pork?
It'll depend. A lot of pork. You're going to see a lot of parts that you don't usually see on menus.
Chicken feet?
Chicken feet, beef tendon, kidney, stomach, all
beef
that sort
tendon,
of
stuff. Beef tendon, kidney, stomach.
Oh, yeah. Beef tendon is one of the most delicious things in the world. I love Jeez. It so much. It's incredible. And so and the San Gabriel Valley is huge. It's absolutely enormous. This enormous population of Chinese, Taiwanese, Vietnamese, Malaysian, all living out there, and the food is just remarkable. So we go yeah. out there all the time. And yet these menus, it's very difficult to order. Their English isn't great, and my Chinese doesn't really exist. So you order off the menu, but I can't check to see, is this stage 5B? How is this part right? So I have to suppress my white desire to know that all the food I'm buying is right.
Because you know it ain't.
And then
you
let
know
it,
it's bulk bought and yes, the cheapest vendor.
Absolutely. And let my white desire to be unique and authentic supersede that one.
God, yeah. It's difficult to be white.
Yeah, well, I have the other thing in the book where I talk about one of the things we like to do as white people is be the only white person around. So I go into a white restaurant like this.
That's fucking awesome.
If I go into a restaurant like this and I see a white guy with no escort, I don't mean prostitute, I mean like an Asian person with him, I'm like, okay, I can handle this. Two unescorted white people in the restaurant, I'm like, done. I got to get out of here. This is the beginning of the end. But believe it or not, the number of times that happened, you think the SGV is only, you know, like a couple miles east of downtown. It almost never happens. Almost the only place it happens are dim sum restaurants because white people love dim sum. They're like, this is the Asian food I like.
Yeah. Well, but Din Tai Fung, right?
Don't get me started on Din Tai Fung.
Yeah, no, let's get started on it. Tell us about Din Tai Fung.
Din Tai Fung, so it's soup dumplings, one of the finest things in the world ever made. You know, and so soup dumplings are a Shanghai specialty, which is, you know, it's pork. It's sort of a gelatinous. So they cook this pork down until it has the fat all around it. You scoop it out. You put it into a little wonton wrapper, tie it up, and you steam it. And then the gelatinous stuff turns into a soup. So you have like this wet, amazing dumpling that you bite into and suck the soup out. Originally from Shanghai, but perfected in Taiwan by Din Tai Fung, which was originally an oil, it's sold cooking oil. And so I remember I ate there, and I was like, okay. And what they're amazing about is the technique, the skill. So the thinner the skin is on the dumpling, the more technically proficient the chef is. And Din Tai Fung is the absolute best in the world. They figured out that it's 18 pleats per dumpling to make it perfect, and they've got it all down to a science. And
you're
amazing. And I had it, and I was like, this
the
is
the greatest podcast so far of all time. Keep going.
And I was like, this is pretty good, but the soup was actually fairly bland. And I thought, well, maybe this is just a victim of being here in Arcadia.
Right.
So my wife and I took a trip to Taipei, not just for Din Tai Fung, but for other things.
Oh, because you're rich? Keep going.
Yeah, so we took a trip to Taipei. Actually, cashed in frequent flyer miles. I fly a lot, too. So I cashed them in. We flew to Taipei to eat at the night markets and all that food. So I went to the Din Tai Fung, you know what I mean? The flagship location. I'm like, let's find out. Let's see. And I ate it. And again, that soup was bland. It wasn't the technical proficiency through the roof, but I was like, this really isn't that great. The best ones I've ever had were in Shanghai, a place called Jia Jia Tang Bao, the absolute best soup dumplings you'll ever have in your life. Incredible. But the best in Los Angeles at a place called J&J. Actually, I don't know how much I want to tell people about this. This could be as I'm saying it out loud.
He's guarded on our podcast. He's guarded about giving up his secret about soup dumplings.
Yeah, but I'll give this one up. J&J on Valley in Prospect Plaza, probably the best soup dumplings in all of Los Angeles.
J&J,
incredible, love them.
So what are your favorite? I put you on a desert island.
Yeah.
I give you. Five different kinds of you can bring seven different foods. Yes.
Okay.
And it can be Chinese food. It can be. I mean, you know, we can.
So when you say, do you mean like a single food item?
So chocolate, butter.
Oh,
wine,
oh okay. I gotta make my own thing.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's a bitch. Let me answer for you. Maybe.
I bring
coffee.
Oh no, I was gonna say one thing. Arsenic. I'm not living with seven ingredients, man.
You
I can't
gotta
do it,
it brother. Yeah. It's only for a month.
A month, okay.
So we got wine.
Yeah, but come on.
Are you a wine guy?
Yeah, I like wine. I like beer. I like all.
Are you
of
a Scotch guy?
Yeah.
Beer. You're more Scotch beer.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, I like wine a lot too.
Yeah,
like
but you're more northern. You're not. You don't have the southern.
No.
You do well with grain alcohol.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah. Well. I don't
so
do,
are you particular
do
about
well.
Your bourbon? About your
yeah.
Scotch?
Well, bourbon's. I like bourbon because bourbon's the cheaper way to get in.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like to that world.
Sure.
Because, right, if the top bourbons in the world, like the absolute best bourbon you can buy, is like $80 a bottle.
Right.
Scotch, of course, you know what I mean? The sky's the limit for the insanity that you can spend. So, bourbon's a great way to get in. So, I'm pretty good with that. So, I'd bring, let's see, I don't know if I'd bring booze. I probably drink it too fast. I'd have to bring egg noodles, like proper, you know what I mean? Like proper, proper Chinese egg noodles.
What is a proper Chinese
egg? Well, you know what I mean? Like thin, you know what I mean? Like the thin, chewy, the proper texture. I'd have to bring that with me. I'd bring Knorr's chicken soup stock. It's a powdered kind that they use. It's really, really popular in China and Taiwan. Sort of like the base.
You love Chinese food.
Yeah, I do. And it's like, this is the easiest one to bring with me because I can just throw the water in there and it'll be fine. What else do I have to bring with me? I mean, once I have those, I think I'm pretty set for a little while. I'm just going to bowl of noodles.
Noodles and chicken stuff.
Green onions, kimchi.
So you love your noodles. I don't eat enough noodles.
Yeah, I love them.
So basically, you just created the world's fanciest top ramen.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, because what about the other white invention is gluten.
Oh, that's another one.
You know, the gluten craze, and it's bad for you.
Well, this is the best one of sort of white people stuff, too, is our belief in alternative medicine
is
absolutely incredible.
And it's such horseshit.
It's such horseshit.
But here's, I just read a number of books. Anyway.
It always blows my mind. It's always amazing of like, as a white person, what sounds reasonable to you? You're like, not vaccinating against a disease that's wiped out millions of people? No, that makes sense. You know what I mean? We're willing to buy into this sort of stuff and like, no, actually, I think this bark will probably cure the cancer that I have. I'm going to go with that one. Yeah. I'm just going to ignore because big pharma, you know what I mean? You can't trust these people at all. And so we're so willing to believe all this. And we're the same way with religion. And so one of the things I have in the book is religions our parents don't belong to are the ones that we're willing to embrace.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like, oh, Buddhism, Kabbalah, sure, all of this.
Kabbalah, Buddhism, all of it.
But don't give me any Christianity whatsoever. No. Judaism, reborn Jewish. Like, no, absolutely unacceptable. Can't do it. It's terrible.
A lot of Jews, some of the great Rinpoches, some of the great Buddhist scholars now are Jews.
Yeah,
a lot
of
them started out as New York Jews. They're like, fuck the Torah. I'm going over here to sit in a, you know. Even Bob Dylan went to that, you know, went to the Eastern religions and then just came back. And now he's like, fuck it, I'm Jewish.
Well, it's like.
No, now he's Christian, isn't he?
Is he?
I think Bob Dylan went Christian. I don't know if he still is. But.
All right.
But yeah, and then, you know, some of the worst Buddhist scholars are white dread college students.
Christians. Yeah, that's right.
But the amazing thing about Buddhism, too, is about how white people will go far enough into it. They're like, okay, I'm really digging all this.
Yeah.
What's this part about wealth?
Well, the same thing with Christianity. I mean, you know, the Jesus was pretty clear on the fact that massive accumulation of wealth isn't necessarily the most Christian thing.
The camel through the eye of the needle.
The early Christians were communists. You know, Ananias and Sapphira tried to save some cash for themselves, and God struck them both dead instantly.
Yeah.
Doesn't get much clearer as a signal, you know.
Yeah, so that's why I sort of like the great white person excuse of saying that I'm not religious, I'm spiritual, gets you out of all of being attached to any sort of dogma.
Well, that's the other thing, not wanting to piss anybody off, right? I mean, there's that. Say, you know, white people historically have been a pretty aggressive race.
Well, what we're like right now is, do you have a brother?
I don't.
Okay, so I have a younger brother. Mm. And one of the things I did growing up was I would fight with my brother.
Yep.
And my record against my brother is like 200-0. And the reason it's 200-0 was at around 14, my brother was bigger than me, and we had a fight, and it was real close.
Oh,
so I retired. I was like, I'm going to leave this undefeated.
That's it.
If we'd had one fight back then, he would have destroyed me.
Yeah.
And so that's where, like, as white people, once we sort of like crushed everything else, we're like, okay, now that we've stacked the chips in the direction that we want it to go, you know, and that we control all of the coastal property we like, and we have all the money. Now it's time for peace. Now that I like this
you
shuffle,
you go to these countries. I don't like going to my family wanted to go to the Dominican Republic for the third time. I was like, I don't want to go there. I feel guilty.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I don't feel good about the fact that on the prime real estate, all the coast, you go to Jamaica,
you go to
Dominican Republic, any of these countries, go to Africa, it's all, you're not seeing any black people on the beach, bro.
Mm-hmm.
They're behind the gate.
Yeah.
You're seeing white people and, you know, rich Europeans.
Yeah.
And Americans.
Yeah,
and
Dominicans,
I don't like it.
Dominican.
I don't like it.
Big destination for Canadians as well. Dominican's really bad for that, especially. And Canadians go to Cuba, and it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Where it's just completely walled off.
Yeah.
And yeah,
I don't like it. Makes me feel bad.
Not really my thing either.
And that's the thing. White people don't like that. They want to feel good. They want to eat chocolate. And
a lot of these are admirable traits. you know, but
you may have the wrong kind of white people rolling down there. You know what I'm saying? And you don't. And so they don't care. You know what I mean? They could care less about what's going on right there.
Right.
But the good kind of white people who do it is they're going down there, they're doing a vacation and volunteering at the same time.
That's right.
That's
build
what
a house.
Yeah.
Habitat for Humanity.
Yeah.
That's
thing,
good.
You do that on your vacation, you're winning.
That's right.
Having said that, there are a whole lot of white people who are not the white people that you write about.
Yes,
in this country,
absolutely. That's right? What I call about the wrong kind of white people.
That's
what we call them.
One of the things that I thought was interesting is that you said that Balki Bartokomas is not white.
Yeah.
Discuss that. How is Balki not white?
Well, I can't even remember why. I can't even
remember. You were talking about the episode of Perfect Strangers. Apparently going to Wrigley Field is enough to turn you white.
Yeah. He wasn't white before he went there.
There, yeah.
After he left, done.
He was white.
Yeah, he was already white. Chicago has that ability.
Yeah.
Especially Wrigley Field.
Yeah, it's a magical place.
It is a magical place of khaki shorts.
Actually, white people, the kind of white people we're talking about are not sports fanatics. They're not very nationalistic, are they?
One sport. Pretending to like soccer. That's what we're the best at. And it's a World Cup year.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's like,
yes.
Get ready. Are we going to cheer for the African team with the cute uniform?
Yeah.
Yes, we are.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
That's going to be our move. But then if you actually start talking to that white person about, you know, La Liga, Premier League, any actual soccer talk, it's like, whoa, I got the scarf.
Don't get detailed.
I got the scarf.
Where does the need to feel unique come in?
Well, probably part of it is the way we were raised, obviously,
yeah.
And especially generationally with your parents. You were told that you were absolutely raised.
We were not ignored. We were paid attention to.
Yes, we were paid attention to and told that we were absolutely unique and we were absolutely different. And that continues through college and it continues forever on. And it's this desperation. It also still comes from guilt. It's a feeling that you want this recognition. I'm one of the good ones.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And one that I have worth. I have value. I am creative. I am... You know, I'm contributing to culture, and you want to have that feeling.
I do.
But it's also the show of being one of the good ones as opposed to actually being one of the good
ones.
Yes,
of course. Yeah. Well, it's like a tree falls in a forest, right? You know what I mean? It's like if I make a donation and it doesn't turn into a bumper sticker on my car, did I even make a donation?
What's the point, right?
That's a lot of the logic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all competition. I mean, all of this, like you said before, and I talk about this a lot, it stems from leisure time. So much of it comes from leisure time.
Yeah.
Like, and to have the leisure time to care if your beef is stage 5 raised requires leisure time. To care about whether or not something's vegan requires enough time.
Yeah.
To say, I'm not starving. You know what I mean?
William McNeil, I think it was, wrote a book called The Shape of European History. And there are a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons that the Greeks, you had Plato and Aristotle and Socrates, was because, you know, Greece was a place where they could export wine, olive oil, and timber.
Mm-hmm.
And it allowed them to go beyond subsistence living. They actually had some time off during the year, the summers or what have you, to actually spend time thinking.
Yeah.
And sitting around and coming up with ideas of what is the meaning of all this.
Yeah.
And when your belly's full and the sun is shining, you can actually sit and say, what does this all mean? I don't know if I feel spiritually fulfilled.
Yes. When your belly's full and the sun, you have enough time to argue not whether or not you can still like a band after they've been in an Apple commercial.
That's
right. You know, like,
what are the books white people read?
The books white people read, well, here's the thing about it. So when you're talking books with a white person, it's a competition, right? And it works like this.
Is
we're going to talk about the books that we've been reading. If I've heard of the book that you're reading, I win, right? You got to go obscure. You got to go deeper. And I got to force you into asking me, like, I don't know if I've heard of that one. And then I'm like, yes, I got it. And then I just launch into a very sort of... You know,
ain't that the truth?
It's also like if you cite some book that is just like obscure and uninteresting, like there's a real thing. It has to be like an obscure but important book.
Of course.
I have to be able to recognize that the book is like a book that I should have read.
Yes.
Right? So
how white are you, Hunter? Because you had a weird upbringing and you speak a lot of different languages.
Well, I don't hand grind my coffee, I'll tell you that much.
No,
but,
you
should start.
Yeah, you're more of a, you're kind of a, you're not as fancy. Are you?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I went to Eton, Brian.
Forget it. Never mind. It's incredibly white.
Yeah, I went to Prince William's Prep School. Like, that's pretty.
You're white as fuck.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty famous.
Yeah.
And he's Dutch.
Yeah. So, you know,
he's a giant Dutchman.
I don't express it through. I think we all express our whiteness in different ways, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Do I feel guilty about our colonial past? Absolutely. You know, do I seek to define my individuality? Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
Well, no joke, you guys were definitely some of the worst. Not even in front. English, yeah, we had our problems. Let's not go there, but man, you guys love the slave trade.
Oh, the Dutch? No.
Listen, let's clear this up once and for all. The Dutch love money.
Yeah, there we go.
And they don't really, they've always been incredibly, I mean, the good side and the bad side of the Dutch is that they're incredibly agnostic about where the money comes from. So that meant that they had like one of the most liberal policies towards Jews and things like that. They were like, you want to make money? We want to make money. Great. The downside of it is that they were the first people to buy and sell slaves in the United States.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Had been going on a long time before that, that's for sure. Yeah. Slavery was something that has been around until very recently.
Mm-hmm.
It was the order of the day, in fact.
It was indeed.
Yeah.
For all societies.
There's a great story that the Dutch king and the Swedish king were standing side by side. And the Dutch king is doing a very white thing and talking about his spirituality and like how religious he is and all this sort of stuff. At a certain point, the Swedish king can't take it anymore. And he's like, shut up. Like, I know what your religion is. And he reaches into his pocket and pulls out a gold coin. And he says, this is your religion.
Yeah.
Like, this is the only God
And in a way,
know.
that is what the white people you're talking about, that really actually is their religion.
Well, no,
it's
but they'll never admit
money.
It. Never admit it.
No.
So the thing about white people is we desperately want to find a way to help the world, you know, do the right thing, be ethical, be moral, but still own a $3 million house.
Goddamn right.
And it's hard. It's really hard to figure out how to do that. We want to find out how to do that. And so it's...
Well, there's this need to simplify, right? Be a minimalist, ride that
so expensive
beach cruiser.
To do
it's so expensive.
So expensive
it's amazing
to be simple.
How much more expensive
you need to save
it is.
Neighborhood, first of all.
Yeah.
We got to knock down walls to be simple. Yeah. You got to have very expensive hardwood floors to be simple.
Those Viking ranges.
Yeah, that's very simple. You know, it's very expensive to be simple these days. It's so much money. And yeah, it's a difficult thing to balance.
You
got to
stay clean and
shop
at Whole Foods.
Well, you also have to be careful what you clean with. You know what I mean? Like, you got to make sure you're using Castile soap or you're using something proper. You know, you got to be...
No chemicals from Dow.
Absolutely not. You can't do that.
Just because they work.
Yeah.
I use crystallized deodorant.
There you go. Oh, I always love... I have that joke.
It doesn't work either.
Exactly. I was trying to explain... in the book, I sort of try to explain all natural products to non-white people. It's like, we have a very long tradition of embracing products that don't work.
It's like, I do.
Oh, this crystal should solve it.
I've had acupuncture done.
Yeah.
We need an online quiz where we can like find out how white we are.
Right at the back of the book.
Is it really?
Check it right at the back of the book.
Great.
Boom, boom, boom. All
oh
in there.
God.
Yeah. It's like 150 things. You just check what's on your
take
list.
It right
what
now.
Makes you, on a serious note,
mm-hmm.
you've written this book. It's great. It's funny. What makes you mad about the world and what would you like to change?
What makes me mad about the world?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of things. I mean, the food is one.
Yeah.
I mean, our relationship to food in America really upsets me a lot. I think factory farming is the worst thing that's ever happened in this country. And I understand the policy that, you know, especially our policy as it relates to corn in this country.
Yeah.
And I understand why Earl Butz did it. You know, it was to feed a growing nation. You had to do it. But what we've done with subsidies and what we've done with factory farming has made it insane to the point where it's cheaper to have a processed corn product than it is a carrot.
That's right.
And that makes no sense
to me.
We've
created a toxic substance called high fructose corn syrup for children.
Uh-huh. And I mean, again, I understood what... The spirit behind why that happened was a good one. It was mm-hmm. to keep food cheap so that people wouldn't starve. And
Earl Butz was a child of the Depression.
Absolutely.
Like, that's what he's trying to solve. Like, he was like, I was hungry as a kid,
but
and
you
that
can't,
was the worst.
But you can't predict what legislation is going to lead to and how it's going to happen. And what we've created is this bad system. So that always upsets me, sort of, especially factory farming and the way we treat that world. I think that we can... The price of meat should go up to reflect what it really costs, you know, in terms of water, in terms of, you know, in terms of agriculture, all that stuff. I think should be changed. So that certainly upsets me. I'm very upset with a lot of the politics in the country, in the U.S. I mean, I'm blatant about it. I'm definitely left wing. I mean, born in Canada, American citizen, but I'm definitely someone on the left. I grew up in a neighborhood that was working class and immigrant. Now it's gentrified to a point that I can't even imagine. Like, my dad was a high school teacher. He bought our house in the late 70s for $70,000. It's worth $1 million now.
Wow.
And it's just the neighborhood's completely changed. So, and I grew up with a lot of kids who were poor or kids who had fled civil wars, were fleeing, you know, poverty in other countries. And I saw the difficulty of being on the same street and the idea of, like, I looked at the opportunity that I had in this one little house, and then I went three houses down and saw the responsibility these kids had to take on in terms of caring for siblings, caring for parents, and the pressure they had to succeed and what it really meant. And I thought, it's sort of insane that we get to take the same tests.
Yeah.
I mean, that it's the same level. And so I think that it really upsets me in this country when I see people so unwilling to help the poor and people so willing to villainize the poor.
How would you help the poor, though?
That's the hard one.
Yeah.
But I think we have to try. And I think that should be the goal of this country, is to help alleviate poverty and do what we can to help.
But isn't poverty less a factor of what you don't have and more a factor of the way people live, their belief system, their behaviors? That's where I think the disconnect is, this idea. Well, let's take from the rich, whoever they are, usually industrious people who put mm-hmm. a lot of wealth back into the country.
Sure.
And let's give it to these people over here. The problem with that is that, first of all, rich and poor are changing a lot. It's mm-hmm. it's a moving river. You know, it's like some people, I know a lot of people had money 1 year and then they have no money the next year. And by the way, when you have money and you spend it on things, you are employing other people.
Yeah.
I mean, but, you know, so that the economy works to an extent that way. But it feels like I worry about the fact that the poor, whatever, there's a poor mindset for mm-hmm. some people. There is a mindset with a lot of people, I notice, where they don't know how to be successful mm-hmm. because they've not been brought up with those techniques, that mindset, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure. But when you're brought up in a neighborhood where the school quality is terrible mm-hmm. and you're brought up in a neighborhood that does not have supermarkets that sell fresh food, you know what I mean, and have fast food and sort of set up these toxic environments that all exist there, mm-hmm. it becomes very hard to see what success looks like
yep.
when you're trapped in a world like this. So trying to find a way to solve that, and I think the state of education, I think, is another thing that also really upsets me. And growing up in Toronto, even it's changed now, but my high school was this incredible place that had kids from the richest neighborhood in town, Rosedale, a bunch of middle-class neighborhoods, some housing projects, all came to one school, and the quality was good. It was mm-hmm. a really good high school. It gave you that opportunity. And here in Los Angeles, we don't have that.
Yeah.
I mean, it is very, very difficult for a regular – I mean, and I understand the challenges the educators face as well. But we have a real problem here to try and fix this. If you're not giving the poor these opportunities and the chance to attend a school that is of a quality that, you know, a rich white person would feel comfortable sending their child to, I think we have such a problem of equality and a problem to solve it, especially in terms of self-sufficiency. You know what I mean? If you're not giving me the tools to help myself succeed, what the hell else am I going to do? Yeah, what can I do?
But I think what Brian's talking about is, yes, there are the literal physical tools, and then there are the mental tools sure. to be able to take advantage of them. And, you know, if you look at, for example, because I work in education, I wrote a book for students. But the so much of the problem is that students don't use the resources they have.
Yeah.
They don't use their textbooks. They don't talk to their teachers. And fundamentally, the biggest problem that we have in education is that students aren't engaged.
Yeah.
You know, they have no reason to ask their teacher questions. They don't look at their mistakes. They don't look up the things they don't mm-hmm. know. They have more resources today than any generation has ever had in the past, and yet they don't use them.
That's what I'm always fascinated by, is I hear people talk. So much of it is not even a question of changing the infrastructure. It's a question of changing the mindset.
Yeah.
You know, somebody was saying about Russia, Putin's not the problem. Putin is just an expression of the Russian mindset.
Mm-hmm.
You know, until Russians realize that they as individuals matter and they can make a difference. And the ideology changes.
Mm-hmm.
The ideas, the way you beat a bad idea is with a good idea. That's the most important thing.
Yeah. I mean, also in places like Russia and India and China, too. I mean, again, when we talk about the actual tools of infrastructure, the corruption in those countries is killing them to level you can't even understand.
That's
because
right.
with that level of corruption and no trust in the government whatsoever, nothing will ever get done.
You don't have any security, your own private property, your own ideas.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things that I think is so interesting that that gets swept under the rug, at least as a concern, is that I know everyone here in America and in the West loves to talk about how corrupt their politicians really, you know, are.
Yeah.
But comparatively,
not even close.
Not really.
Mm-hmm.
They're
not
actually,
even close.
They're great.
Not even close.
And we don't talk about what effect this has on the rest of these countries and that mindset as well. And so, you know, I've been to China a bunch of times and I've sort of seen some of the ways it works. And it's like, it is going to be a huge struggle in that country forever.
Yeah.
To be able to hold on to the wealth. The wealthy people all want to leave, again, because of this corruption, this inability to change. And so, yeah, and the mindset in Putin and all of that, is until they can sort of solve the corruption problem, I don't think you're ever
going
to...
Well, it's a snake eating its own tail.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
When you start to realize that the KGB owns everything and the guys with the biggest guns and the best organized crime group is the ones that get all the spoils, until you realize how bankrupt that idea is, how it doesn't work even for them.
Yeah.
And that kind of happened in Latin America. I mean, if you look at Latin America, they were all military dictatorships.
Mm-hmm.
You can't keep killing your own people.
Yes.
Is there that saying that, you know, I heard a therapist say that punishment doesn't change behavior, it just suppresses behavior. You can keep the truth down just so long. I mean, things pretty soon people go, you know, we need to start changing the way we think about things.
Yeah. And that's the thing is that, you know, I mean, if you look
at... And that's where this book comes in.
No, but if you look at what happened in the 1960s, I mean, you know, the dominant theory in the 1960s of how you, you know, develop countries, whether it's the United States or internationally, was big infrastructure projects, huge inflows of capital. You know, LBJ tried to build this great society. Mm-hmm. Places like Russia were all about building, you know, massive hydroelectric dams. And the problem is that, yeah, you don't have the culture in place to be able to maintain them. And so within a few years, those projects have, you know, those resources have been destroyed. They've fallen into disrepair and all that sort of
stuff. That's where I'm optimistic about the internet and these kinds of things, even blogging and podcasts. You know, ideas are catching on faster probably than mm-hmm. they would otherwise.
True. But
yes,
we're also,
or no?
Well, yes. But I'm also, and this is just from my own experience, is watching the what the internet is at least going to do to culture from now on, and especially books and especially writing. And for those who are inclined to read and those who are inclined to books, it's fantastic because guess what? You know what I mean? Google Books has, you know, stored all these great books you can read. You can order from just – I mean, how easy it is. When I was a kid, how hard it was to get a book sometimes.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like interlibrary loan and blah, 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 all that,
all
sort of
that
stuff.
All that shit.
Now it's a Kindle. It's the easiest thing in the world. It's great. So if you're inclined to that, it's fantastic.
Another white thing.
If you're not –
Another white thing,
yes,
Kindles.
Absolutely.
And they even have white in the name now. Kindle,
yeah,
paper,
paper
white.
Yeah. Indeed. But if you're not inclined to those things, what we're going to end up with and what we're starting to have happen now is that all of our knowledge and all of our world experience, even though we have access to everything, is just becoming this small, tiny circle. And you watch the way people browse, and what will happen is people will have about 15 websites they go to over and over and over and over again.
Yeah,
and that's
YouTube,
it.
RedTube, UJizz. Sorry. That's me. Keep going.
You're RedTube, man.
Yeah,
right.
No, UJizz. I scan it. I'm not crazy. XNXX. I got it all.
Brian likes to hear all sides of
I
the
like to just, yeah.
I have
a spirit of discovery and variety. I've gotten to the point where porn doesn't even do anything to me anymore. I'm like, what can I got to find something weird on these fucking.
Well,
where's a video that I can really. Yeah. I'm such a fucking straight sex between a man and a woman. Blech, what a bore.
That's
I'm a freak.
I'm so glad that didn't exist when I was 14, 15 years old. I mean, I don't even know if I'd be here.
I don't either.
I don't know what I would have done.
My dick would have just whittled away to dust.
I would have just been dehydrated all the time. Like withered away like a mummy or one of those kings preserved in
a bog. I was a chronic masturbator to begin with. I can't imagine with the porn. Jesus.
I mean, because at least I had to use some of my time trying to find the material when I was younger.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I had to use my cunning.
Like the Dewey Decimal System.
Yeah,
and stuff,
you had to, like, and the other thing is, like, when you're a kid, you know, it's like you find a porno mag in the bushes. It was, like, the greatest thing in the world, you know?
I found Penthouse magazines in my grandmother's house under bed. I think they belonged to my uncle. Dude, they were Penthouse, and I used to lock myself in that room, and it was, like, Christmas in July, man.
Well,
holy
shit. I always make the joke that... we were like Eskimos with a porno. We used every part of that magazine.
Uh-huh.
You know, you read all the letters. You know what I mean?
We were like Eskimos.
You know, we read the letters. You know, you jerked off to like the phone sex ads in the back.
Yes.
Like every part of that magazine was used.
You read the shit out of you it over and over again.
The letters, the interviews, you got it all. And now kids today, it's like
that's what's wrong with kids today.
They get everything, and it's like, no, this isn't what I want. Click,
it's
click,
actually
click,
a
click.
Fact that I've heard. I've read some studies. It's affected the way girls and boys deal with each other because girls are very young and trying to, they're doing what they think the boys want, so they're doing these porn things. Yeah, and boys get bored and they have multiple sex partners. They just keep moving on because, well, you know, she's got a dent here. When you were my age, I'm 47. When first time, you know, through high school and even college, when a girl was naked in front of me, I wasn't looking at her imperfections.
No.
I was like, holy shit, she's naked.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even notice, you know, the things that other people would. I was just like, this is the most incredible thing I've ever seen. She's just naked.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
who has time to be? I mean,
what? No.
No. That's very, very disappointing to hear.
So,
but yes, these are my concerns about the culture moving forward for internet is that the ability.
I mean,
it is that whole, you know, the best place to hide a leaf is in the forest. Mm. And so we're getting to a point now where it's like the best way to release horrible government secrets is put it in the longest book possible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, I'm just worried that everything's available to us, but no one's going to care because they're busy looking at cats and jerking off.
There's so much.
And in some cases, jerking off two cats. Yeah.
They will care when it affects their ability to speak their mind, eat good food,
send their children to school, and
regulate their body temperature.
But the problem is that what happens is that, you know, you erode the critical capacity, the ability to think that allows you to defend those rights, and then you suddenly find that you can't articulate.
Look, George
in such
Washington
a way,
said
know.
Men will invent laws and take their own freedom away from themselves. I think that he was the one who said it. But, I mean, one of the good things about this, or maybe not, but the fact of the matter is, we've come a long way as a society in terms of protecting and furthering our biology. We're not having to worry about burying our own children. Mm-hmm. We have enough to eat, all of us, almost all. Most of us have a cell phone. We can communicate. We want most of us own a TV or a flat screen. I mean, there are a lot of things. And I'm talking about poor people, rich people. Mm-hmm.
We're
not going to die in the street. I mean, yeah. So the fact of the matter is we are solving the big problems. Bad diseases. Smallpox and starvation really suck.
Yeah.
Really suck.
Well, if we don't keep vaccinating, they're coming back.
Yeah, so. Burying your child because they died of some terrible fever.
Terrible.
Sucks.
Yes.
Beyond. So we've really solved a lot of these major problems. Clean running water, mm-hmm. antibiotics, vaccines.
Yeah.
I mean, it just goes on and on. The internet. Those are pretty amazing. Food, the way we were able to talk about, you know, the kind of variety we have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Man.
The end of marauding bands.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great thing not to have to deal with anymore.
That's right.
But you need a culture that maintains these things.
The end of marauding bands.
Which is, by the way, the name of this.
It's so true.
Yeah.
I mean, like the odds of a Mongol horde busting in here.
And those were very bad guys.
Yeah.
I would have been literally obsessed about one thing, and that was killing Mongols.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why armies were like, we got to go into the Gobi Desert and figure out a way to store enough water to get these fuckers who are living off their horses.
Yes.
They're tapping into their horses' veins.
Yeah, shooting arrows mid-stride, destroying us all.
I know. And then, anyway. So
there's no doubt that we've come a long way. But, you know, the problem is that the mindset that creates wealth is not the same as the mindset that inherits wealth. You know, and I think
that's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's that great Andrew Carnegie has a really great quote, which is that in America, it's three generations from shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves. And, you know, having spent time with rich people, there's an amazing difference culturally and mindset wise between the guy who makes the family fortune mm-hmm. and the guy who inherits the family fortune.
Doubt.
You know, and I mean, I think that's what I worry about is that essentially, you know, you look at the internet and all these sorts of things. We are more like the people who inherited that family fortune. We've inherited freedom. We've inherited a level of prosperity. And do we have the mindset to maintain it?
Well, was it Barry Switzer that said it? He was born on third and thought he hit a triple.
Yeah.
That's it.
Absolutely.
That's the worst attitude in the world.
That never has lost on me, man.
Yeah.
That's never. I'm such a fuck up. I just was so. I had so much scaffolding.
Yeah.
I had so many rails to hold on the way up, if you want to call this the.
Yeah,
by the way. And you
Brian,
are,
you are at the top.
I am at the top of the gym. But I do. I get paid for what I love to do.
Yeah.
I was rated the number one comic of all time. I think that's the quote in the New York. Yeah, that's what they said. So it's the New York Times. So they would know. That's a white publication.
They referred to me once as preternaturally excellent.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't read that article.
They actually did. The review of my second book. I'm just, I don't know. I mean, where'd that come from?
Did you get that?
Yeah.
That's
I mean, it's like, you never forget something like that.
Preternaturally excellent.
I never forgot. It's like burned into.
If the New York Times says that about your book, you better go read it.
So it was like the greatest thing that, I mean, I never forgot. I mean,
they're painfully funny, dude.
It's a lifetime.
It's painful.
It's a lifelong dream, and it sort of freaks you out.
The book is
And now
stuff
all there's left to do is to go to the San Gabriel Valley and eat truly authentic Shanghainese soup dumplings.
Yep,
the white man, the white man we're talking to is Christian Lander. The book is the definitive guide to stuff white people know, the unique taste of millions. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a lot
of
fun.
And the second book is also awesome, by the way.
Yeah,
Whiter Shades of Pale.
The stuff white people like coast to coast, from Seattle sweaters to Maine.
Are you working on anything else?
I've been working on Chosen on FX.
Right.
Airs Monday after Archer, and then TV stuff.
Good.
You know, that is.
You can come back literally anytime. For real. Like, we got to start having repeat guys like him.
I agree.
Just to have.
And
on
listen,
the
we'll bribe you to come back on with a bespoke artisanal axe.
There you go. Oh, yeah.
Great.
I could use one of those.
Yeah.
It's great. Korea
Town's getting mad real.
It's getting mad.
Why do white people love the zombie apocalypse? What is up with that?
I can't even understand.
Yeah.
What is
the deal?
It's just like, no, I don't know.
Is it the one place you can actually kill people and not feel guilty?
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
I feel that's what it is. I feel it's like you can actually fantasize about the arsenal you'd use. Because if you get me talking on how I would defend against the zombie apocalypse, I get a little crazy about it. Because I know what weapons I would use.
Would it be an artisanal axe?
I have my weapons. Oh, well, no. It'd be a katana. It'd be a real katana, like made in Japan, a samurai sword that can cut. I'd have to learn how to really cut, because you have to cut their heads off.
Uh-huh.
An axe is too hard to wield. You got to fight a bunch at a time. It's got to be light but very strong, very sharp. Uh-huh. And then, of course, I would have a combat shotgun, what they call a street sweeper, mm-hmm. with probably double lot or scatter. Scatter. I'd have a lot. You need a lot of
would
fucking
you get
ammo.
AA-12. You know, the repeating shotgun.
Yes, of course. That's what I'm saying. That's why call it the combat.
I just want to make sure that.
Fuck are you asking me?
Need a hand grinder for your coffee so that you had the energy to fight the zombies.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, yes, I would have that, but I would also have, I'd need a tower of some kind mm-hmm. that they couldn't climb up. I'd mm-hmm. have to grease it. And then I would just take pot shots. I think I'd need a long rifle too. I'd need a fucking long rifle.
50
I need
cal.
Too powerful. You don't need that much firepower.
Just dealing with numbers.
And the bullet's too heavy, and you need a sound suppressor on it. It's too loud. I would have probably your regular Win Mag 300, the kind of thing I've shot deer with. But I need
a big magazine.
You shot
deer, Brian?
I've shot three deer in my life.
Were you wearing flannel at the time?
I was not. I was wearing – it was so fucking cold that I was wearing a shitload of down and heat packs on my body.
There you go.
Yeah. I like the warmth. Yeah. I have a cold phobia.
Oh, yeah, I'm Canadian, man. It rolls right off.
Look at that, you stud. First thing I thought of when you walked in, Christian, I was like, the man's name is Christian, and he's not temperature sensitive.
I used to live in Montreal, man. The water would freeze in my eyes.
Oh, it's so fucking cold there. Oh, it's so cold. Beautiful women.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful women.
Wonderful.
And you're a beautiful man, Christian.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
You make the world a very funny place, sir. So thank you so much. And I'm going to go have myself a microbrew.
Oh, beautiful.
Let's go find ourselves a gastropub, should we? After my boxing lesson. And after I look at a house in a gated community.
There you go.
In Calabasas, I might buy.
Wrong kind of white people. No, where you're looking for a house. Hancock Park, Highland Park.
You're right.
Silver Lake, Echo Park.
You're right. I lived Abbott in Venice Kenny. For 17 years.
There you go.
Do you teach classes?
No,
you should. I mean, you know, I think Brian and I would like to sign up. You know,
I want to be less white. I want to be more edgy, which is
that
white
thing to do.
Which is even whiter.
Rejecting whiteness is something we really try to do.
It's a very white thing to do. I wish I could grow dreads, but I can't. My hair sucks.
No, don't become a white dread. They're my mortal enemy, man. We'd be over at this point. That's too far.
It's way too far.
Yeah, don't go that far.
Can't stand
it. It's like, because you can only, white dreads only exist in places where there's not enough black people to keep them in check. So, like, liberal arts campuses and, like,
Edmonton,
Germany.
Canada.
Germany. Yeah. Yeah. Edmonton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you're a stripper. ladies and gentlemen, this has been another fantastic hour. I hope you learned everything. I hope you learned everything.
Oh, my God. Was that a Freudian slip, Brian?
Yeah, I hope you learned everything. And,
things white people don't
I'm
going to
be
love.
Doing stand-up in Vancouver, speaking of very
oh,
white.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah, April 3rd, 4th, 5th. I think we sell out really quickly, which is exciting because I'm super funny.
Where are you going to eat?
What did the New York Times say?
You're
going
to have to give me – I want your – you got to tell me where you –
You got to go Vancouver. You got to get the Japa Dog, the most famous – you know, street food in Vancouver.
Japa Dog?
Yeah, it's like a Japanese hot dog. It's great. And then the other one is Vidge's, the Indian restaurant. It's like sort of seen as the best Indian
been
restaurant.
Been there, ate there, loved it.
Then yeah, so those would be my all two right. for Vancouver, my two big ones.
Done, ladies and gentlemen. You heard it first, Christian Lander. You want to know where to get the best ethnic food? You go to a white guy. Like thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show with Brian Callen. Be sure to like him on Facebook. Just search for Brian Callen Comedy. And follow him on Twitter. Just search for @BrianCallen. You can also find him online by visiting his website. Just go to briancallen.com. Until next time, bye-bye.